And I brought this technology to a meeting in a skiff room in Virginia that was arranged by a friend of mine with the CIA and another friend of mine with the State Department at the time to introduce this technology to what we felt at the time were the right parties to use this new technology responsibly. Now, I hadn't heard about the remnant or any other religious beliefs at the time that said that everybody was going to be implanted with some sort of marking system, law of the beast or 666. I wasn't even aware of that stuff at the time. And I was taking this as a serious solution to a potentially problem that would not go away. And it was interesting, we met in this room, and because of the tight meetings we were involved with, certain people would not introduce their, give you their full name or where they came from. I just had to trust that my two contacts had contacted the right parties to be there at the right time and that they would all be responsible individuals. There was a mistake. After that meeting, I discovered that two of the people in the meeting had never been asked there, yet they knew about the meeting. They knew what it was about. They knew who was going to be there. And later research indicated that one of them actually worked for the Department of Agriculture and one of them worked for the Department of the Treasury. What prompted our looking at these two men was that the way they asked the questions they asked, the attitude behind them, even the body language, indicated that they had reasons for the use of this technology other than the one that was intended at the meeting. In fact, their largest concern was, how fast could we make a couple billion of them? And could we each get, if each one of those, a unique identity number? Now, this particular pill-shaped device, very minute, had a lot of flexibility in its capabilities. It was basically just almost a transponder. You would send a frequency to it, and it would respond back with its unique number, which could not be changed once the chip was made. Yet there were a lot of capabilities that could be added to this chip, such as monitoring temperature, blood pressure, pulse, and even waveforms out of the brain. But that was for research down the road. What was amusing to me a few months ago on a website likes to collect articles on the unusual is that a lady out east had a chip removed from her body in 1999. And they had it blown up on the website. And it was a slight modification of this chip from Denver with some of its enhancements. And it was put in her, she believes, in either 1980 or 1981. What was amusing about this was that this gentleman never had to worry about money again. And he quietly passed on a lot of this technology to somebody we never knew. And this concerned my contacts in Washington because it never went anywhere with them. Somebody else took it and ran with it, and we never knew who it was. Now, in 1984, I found another technology by just sniffing the web, sniffing the literature of our industry and a dozen other industries, and I found that there was a professor at the University of New South Wales, where I still have the files on, that had discovered a way to make a microscopic lithium niobate chip. And by accident, he had scratched it. And he had a RF transmitter there. And he had a receiver on by sheer chance. And he found that on a certain frequency, he could send an energy beam to the chip. And it would respond back with a number. He worked on that technology. And that technology, eventually, I found out about. We flew him in to Denver to our company, Systems Group of Colorado, and we did a test. He had some primitive small chips he brought with him. They're totally passive and very small, a 1/32 of an inch, and only a couple thousandths thick. And by etching them, you could, again, create a unique signature, unique to each one. And this one, theoretically, could, depending on the size of it and the size of the etching, could have a unique number in the billions and billions.